Okay, we're good to go.
All right. I'm David Hartwell. I'm calling the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council meeting to order on September 3rd at 8:02. Members, I hope you slept well last night. Didn't spend too much time reading all of your reports that came in. I want to thank you for the first 3 days of the hearings and appreciate everyone's engagement and good questions. I'd like to start this morning with not a discussion, but ask Sandy to walk us through the reports that she sent, just so that we all understand them. I got there, but it wasn't immediately intuitive. And that's no reflection on Sandy's work, because she's basically keeping track of it, and I know she knows it really well. But I thought it might be helpful if you could walk through, especially the spreadsheet, Sandy, and just make sure everyone is completely clear on what that's telling us, if you're willing to do that.
Oh, yeah, no problems. If there's a better way or easier to understand format, I'm welcome to suggestions. So you received two spreadsheets. One of the spreadsheets was kind of in appropriation order. What this kind of shows is which programs are still open, which ones aren't, and the percentage of their appropriation that they have spent to date. And then I have a column with some notes. If it says extended, I've tried to put the reason why it was extended. And I explained the IDP money issue in the memo that I sent you guys. And sometimes if a program is extended because they have one parcel that was a late acquisition, they're given the additional 5 years to do the restoration enhancement on that parcel according to the appropriation availability. On the spreadsheet, if it says acres plus plus, that means that that program has already exceeded the acres that they had promised in the accomplishment plan. And then any other kind of little notes that that I thought would be pertinent when I was reading over the status updates. The second spreadsheet are all of the funded programs clumped together by organization and program type. Sometimes the organization that originally had been funded is different than the one that currently holds that program. So that kind of explains why you would see different organizations kind of clumped together. The spreadsheet gives the full appropriation amount that they received. And then if they are finished and have filed a final report, the next column is the dollars that they spent in total that was reported in the final report, along with the acres that they had promised, the acres that they delivered in the final report. And then if they don't have a final report, we recorded dollars spent and acres accomplished in the next two columns. And then the last two columns is the leverage that was promised and the leverage that was received as it was reported in a final report. So if we don't ask people to report back on leverage and status updates, it kind of gets too cumbersome, but we keep track of it for the final reports. And I can stand for any questions. Usually if there's something that doesn't look right, I'll try to highlight that in the staff memo. Otherwise, I'm always kind of looking to see, is the program making progress? How does that program compare to other programs that are like that in the appropriation year as far as spending? And those are the kind of things that I'll look at. I also look at the narrative, because sometimes people continue to show a low percentage spent and you think that they're not getting anything done, but in reality, their narrative would be, you know, we've got 25 easements that are gonna close in the next month. So then they'll have something in their explanation as to, you know, why their percentage of spending maybe wasn't up there as well as their acres accomplished. So everybody kind of has a unique situation. Some of the state agencies, because they pull data out of the state accounting system, will report encumbered money, even though it technically isn't spent and out the door. NGOs maybe don't have that same accounting system. So I kind of take that into consideration too when people are reporting back money spent, because that's not the total story always.
Sandy, one of the questions I had in looking at the reports were, you know, we have a lot of programs that get money year after year, and they seem to spend money out of one year that is more current than years they have received funds in the past. Why wouldn't they just put in an amendment request when they get to a project and use up old money first instead of spending new money when they still have old money online? Can you answer that for me?
Yeah, so sometimes they have a very large or expensive acquisition that maybe they just have a couple drips of money left, and rather than split that parcel between the 2 years, which requires kind of some additional reporting, they'll just choose to pay for it out of 1 year. And sometimes people will have parcels or restoration contracts encumbered that they know that money will be spent, even though it's not really reflected in the status update. And so that technically that program is done, and they're moving on to the next program's funding. So that's what I mean by it kind of doesn't always tell the whole story.
So just for an example, on the first page, if I go down to the bottom, and I don't mean to pick on Bowser, but it's a more clear picture than anywhere else. If you look at either the buffers for wildlife and water or the rim wetlands, there's significant amount of money from 2015 and 2016 that's still left, but they're spending money from 2017 and 18. And that just didn't make the most sense to me.
I don't know the answer to that. It could be the fact that when you have a signed purchase agreement for an easement, it might not make the deadline for that appropriation year. And they've been trying to kind of figure this out. And so then they'll put it in the next year. And, you know, they've asked for extensions of time to sort of accommodate this. So that would be my guess.
But I don't mean to pick on them, but they're there, so I have to ask the question. They've got a 2015 Minnesota buffers for wildlife and water. They've got roughly $2.5 million left on the 2015, and yet they've spent $5 million of their 6.5 of their 16 appropriation.
Well, I think that they started to spend their 16 money because they didn't know if they were going to get the legislative extension for the 15 money. And then that extension came through, so now that enables them to try to spend the rest of the 15 money down.
And in the meantime, we've given them money for 17 and 18, and they've spent almost none of it.
Correct. Okay. Yep, correct. And if I remember right, I remember the presenter mentioning something about they have a lot more things that they've accomplished that they didn't necessarily report in the status updates. But, you know, I can only go off of what is in
the
status
updates. No, I'm not asking you to read the tea leaves. I'm just perplexed. And I use them because they're on the first page and it's easy to see. But there are other examples of that. Shell Rock River was the same thing when you get to the back end of the report where they've got 4 years open. It's the same kind of thing, and it ends up being confusing as to why we are giving them, even considering new grants when they haven't spent the old ones.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a situation where, because the amount of time to spend the acquisition money has to end in 3 years, if 80% of their program is acquisition, then they're going to have, you know, that chunk spent while they spend down the last of the restoration enhancement. So with Shell Rock, let me just find that. I'd have to actually pull the file to get the specifics on this, but I thought they had one year that was acquisition only, maybe.
Well, they have open money from 2015, 16, 17, 18, and 19.
Right. So like their 15 money is just about all spent. They have only a couple hundred thousand. So those are the kind of things I look at.
They've got a $500,000 of a $2.5 million appropriation.
Right.
And yet they spent 675 of the 16 and 698 of the 17. But all told, they've got, you know, probably 12 million dollars of appropriation, and they've spent three.
And without pulling those specific reports, I wish my memory would allow me to hold all the information for each program. You know, in this particular case, they might have had like three easements ready to close that are going to close, you know, in a month, and they just didn't include that with their number, but they're going to be done. And so if there's a specific program, I can kind of go back to the file and
recreate this is,
it.
They were just two examples.
Yeah.
Jamie, you have a question. I don't mean to monopolize, but I know others were, based on a couple of emails I got, others were a little confused by this as well. So I thought I'd push for it.
I just wanted to thank Sandy for her work, and I just, even listening to her right now, it's just incredible the amount of information that you do remember. And there's just so much to take in these documents, but it's super, super helpful. So I just wanted to thank Sandy, because we could not figure this all out on our own without her putting together these very detailed spreadsheets.
That is for certain.
If anyone has a specific question on a program, feel free to send me an email and I will pull the file and give you the detail if there's something that looks concerning to you. But usually if there is something concerning, I've put it in my memo to try to highlight it.
Yeah, it's great. Great information. Are there other questions for Sandy on the reports that she sent out? Or are you tired of me asking questions? No, thanks so much, Sandy. It's great.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So I think we ought to go back to talking about specific programs, if that's all right with everyone, unless people had thoughts over the night in general on the discussions that we've had or the direction we're going. And Jamie, I see you have another question, so please, or comment, by all means.
Yeah, thank you. So just kind of after starting to dig into everything that Sandy sent us last night, just considering, I'm just thinking really hard now about the folks who still have a lot of money from previous years and how we balance that with new projects and the programs that are using the funds the way we are hoping that they're using the funds. And I know there's you know, individual reasons and questions and things like that, but just at some point, and maybe we need more time to digest everything that Sandy sent us, but you know, like if we have a program that's sitting on, you know, $5 million plus dollars from previous years in a year where we're clearly not going to be able to fund everybody, I'm just thinking a lot about that and sort of the fairness and kind of spreading things out to make sure that the funds are being spent the way that the public wants the funds to be spent and the way we want it to be spent.
Yeah, I would think it might make sense for us to make it known that if everyone doesn't get what they want, modifications of accomplishment plans to blend years together so that nobody can come back and say, yeah, but this year we said we were going to do that and we can't do that in the future years. And so we're holding off. And, you know, in the end, the public wants the money in the ground, you know, as quickly as possible. And if we as a council were to send the message that we're flexible in terms of accomplishment plan for multi-year programs, if there's any hold up because of accomplishment plans, they ought to bring them to us, and that would buffer some of the tough decisions we have to make and get more money out there quicker. But the other Jamie Swenson, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Chair. I echo the comments before. Thank you, Sandy, for putting this information together. I'm still digesting as well. On the programs of concern, I know the RIM programs were brought up in previous years as far as concerns with the spend. As Representative Becker-Finn mentioned, as we're looking at programs that we may not be able to fund this year or decrease funding, can Sandy touch on these a bit again and remind us what the problems were before and if those problems have been resolved and these are new problems or if these are still the same problems?
So I went back to look at the last status update that I submitted to you guys, and that update had concerns with spending for RIM and buffers, and in both cases, the council approved a legislative extension to allow them to additional time to spend their money. So the ML-15 and the ML-16 RIM both got an extension of time, as well as the 15 and 16 RIM buffers, and then the 16 RIM wetlands, all three received a legislative extension. I believe that was in the ML-19 appropriation bill. And then the RIM wetlands, the 17, they were part of the COVID-19 extension, so they got an extra year, like everybody did who applied. Does that answer your question?
Sandy, one question I had in reading your report, and I failed to mention it, was the Bushman Lake project, which the Conservation Fund has abandoned, but that money has not been turned back yet.
Right. So this report focuses on active programs, and the Bushman Lake was pointed out in the last status update as an issue that money would be turned back. But I haven't officially received a final report from them, kind of getting caught up here. So I didn't put that in here because we don't know the specific amount. I know that there was some money that they spent. I think it's under $100,000, but it's not like officially closed yet.
I guess the question is that money really going to be available to us to spend this year?
That is a question for MMB. So we should check with them and see if they've received some sort of turn back. I think, maybe Joe can chime in because he kind of worked with this, and I don't remember if the legislative staff, I knew we had to define a specific amount that we thought was estimated to be turned back, but I don't know if it officially went through the channels at MMB.
Joe, you want to? Yeah,
Mr. Chair and members, from what I remember, that since it was officially canceled in the last legislative session, that the money is available, whatever they have not spent.
So would that make our total go from 110 to 115 roughly, or is that already calculated in?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe that was calculated and used to get us the 5% reserve in the last legislative session, so it's already been in use.
Okay, Mark is giving his thumbs up, as is Denny. So Thank you. I just saw it on the report and thought maybe there was more money to spend. Forget I mentioned it. Mark?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, also that Stearns County, the Melrose Fish Dam, that money also was used towards balancing for this last year.
Okay. Great. Sorry to take us aside, but I did think we should check it out. Mark Holstein?
Yeah, just in a general comment to what we've been talking about here, I recalling conversations I had with people years ago about the fund and dollars going out. And the conversation was, would there be the infrastructure out there to be able to handle this volume of dollars coming through the pipeline? And we kind of knew that, intuitively knew that there was going to be some stresses and some struggles being able to spend all these dollars at the rapid pace. But I, what I've been seeing in the documents is these organizations ramping up, getting the staff in place to be able to deal better than they have in the past. I'm not excusing anything. I'm not casting judgment on anything. I'm just trying to relay that I want to be cautious over the next couple of weeks and months before we get to a final allocation, that I know there are projects that fall off and we'll be able to get those dollars back. There are going to be projects that they're ready to go, ready to encumber, but they just haven't got it through the system yet. And that some are just dealing with infrastructure problem, and that could be the contract services that are necessary to do some of this work. But that's it. It's just general comment of this is a good problem that we're having. These dollars are still going to be out there for us to use either in the future, or they're going to get on the landscape. It's just we've got to be cognizant of that, the volume of dollars we're putting into the system and their ability to spend it in 1 year. That's it.
Okay.
The one other thing I'll just point out with the second spreadsheet is, although some organizations may look like they're slow to spend, you can see from what they have spent that they've been on track mostly and have spent, 90% of what they've been given in a timely manner. So that's kind of another thing to consider.
Sure. Thanks. Dan, you have a comment?
Well, just for future reference, Mr. Chair, and we can use the information that Sandy's put together in this round, but maybe next year the council wants to consider that when someone submits a proposal, either the written proposal or when they come to do their presentation on the proposal, that they bring a report with that shows the funding that they still have, I'll say, on the books that hasn't been spent, and that would be a helpful tool on the front end.
Great. Some have done that and some don't, so it wouldn't hurt to ask them for that. Ashley, you have a comment?
Yeah, just going off this last point really quickly, that would be really helpful. I actually think that there might be a couple things in the reporting or the initial proposal that could, I don't want to weigh people down with too much paperwork. Obviously there's a lot of reporting that goes into this, so we need more information. More information is better, but I think in addition to thinking about what else we want, were there things in the proposals that people didn't find useful? And we can figure out how to make this easy for people, or easier or more effective in terms of getting us to a decision point. The other thing I was wondering is just in terms of the spend down, do we know if there's a correlation between, obviously I would assume year one of funding, organizations aren't spending the money down very quickly. Year two would be a lot faster. Do we know typically if we are not seeing a fast spend down by year one, by year two or year three, does that indicate that there's a real problem? I don't know if that question makes sense, but I'm just wondering if there's a way to tell, you know, in terms of what year the funding is in and how fast an organization is spent down, whether or not they're doing well.
I actually think if we were to come up with a format for presenters to provide us on prior years, appropriations and spend downs and commitments, and acres, you know, essentially a snapshot of Sandy's report, maybe a little more detailed, that everyone came in with at the time they make presentations, and it was standardized, so we were looking at the same thing over and over. That might be a really useful tool. It would also, I think, encourage presenters to think about whether or not they've done what was expected of them before they make requests for additional funds.
Yeah, I'll just point out, we did add that table this year into the proposal. So for example, if you look at PA02 on page 5, they list all their past appropriations, how much they receive, what was spent to date, leverage, realized, acres. And so every proposal, you know, should have filled that out, if that helps in any way.
Yeah, I think it does. I think if it were part of the presentation, so that it was real time at the time of presentation versus these proposals are sometimes written in March or April, and a lot has happened since then. Updating that and making sure we're good with the format would be good. Mark, I'm going to ask you to put on your to-do list before we send out requests next year, a request for proposal, that we tease this out and come up with a format, as well as discuss what we want on the proposal and if there's anything that doesn't need to be there. Okay. Great. Other just general comments? All right. So let's go talk about proposals, which is what we say. Oh, Denny, you have a comment.
Mr. Chair, what I was wondering, I did use that table, Sandy and all staff, thanks for your great work. That chart you just alluded to, I used it a lot during the presentations. And Mr. Chair, I think you make a good point that if it was real time and they brought it forward, and I would think all we would want, having the chart in the book, I think is good. When they come forward in real time, I think all we'd really be interested in would be the unspent ones, the ones that are closed out there on the chart. But the last, sometimes it's 3 or 4 years, have some unspent money. And could they give that? And then I think a percentage of what's left over. I mean, we could see it, but a column, I think, of the percentage. And then what I had a question, maybe this is a question that would take some legislative change, but what about allowing them when they've got in the last 3 or 4 years, can we do something to allow them to blend that money so that they can use and burn up those later ones that maybe would clean up the reporting? Because Sandy made a mention that they got to jump around if it's a bigger project. Is there some blending on these projects that go from year to year that we could allow happen? And I don't know the answer. I don't know if Executive Director Johnson or one of the legislators knows the answer to that.
Denny, I think we can, we have fairly broad authority to allow for amended accomplishment plans. So if someone wanted to change a parcel list and take three from 2018 and put them into 2016 and spend that money and take the 16s and put it into 18 because they're still working on it, that's well within our authority and easy enough to do. So I think a lot of it can be done working with the council versus having to go back to the legislature. But you have a follow-up?
Well, Mr. Chair, if I'm not mistaken, sometimes those accomplishment plans maybe take approval by our group. I was actually thinking that if there was in legislation that allowed them a certain flexibility when they're down to the last 10%, they can move that money forward automatically and kind of just with some kind of a report to the staff to let them know, because isn't an amendment to the accomplishment plan takes our action, and there may be in a purchase agreement with some property owner that, you know, it is, you got three family members and two want the cash and one wants the land and they just want to get out of there. So I'm wondering if there's a possibility that would make that, because I think that amount of money on the bottom line for a lot of these from previous years, you make a good point. And I think there's turnbacks then that happen 5-6 years later at this leftover money that would be better to be moved forward. And then we might not need to give them as much, and we could give it to some, because where we're spending a lot of good time right now talking about the ones that haven't spent the money, what I've been amazed to look at some of them, how fast they actually spend it. It's encouraging.
Oftentimes you'll see project managers have the same parcel on multiple appropriation year lists because they don't really know the timing of it and where the timing will fit in. So that's a very common thing. And we handle a lot of internal accomplishment plan amendments, moving parcels around, and managers are given the flexibility to add and subtract restoration enhancement work as weather changes and, you know, burn crews may not be able to be on the ground. So that is the flexibility that's kind of already given. And part of it sort of depends upon when a purchase agreement is encumbered. And if it doesn't meet the deadline, they'll take it out of the next year is what we see. But we do handle a lot of accomplishment plan amendments internally that you guys don't see all of them.
Mark, do you have a follow-up to that, or should I go to Jamie, who had her hand up first?
Actually, I do, Mr. Chair, and Sandy hit it right on the head. We do work with the vast majority of amendments just go through staff. They're administratively approved, and we try to make sure that the recipients and the project managers are always communicating with us if they have any questions on stuff. With respect to Denny's comment on the, moving some tail funds forward and so on, the biggest problem, it would take some legislative action in many cases, because you do have the availability of appropriation that's set in law. And the other thing about having that availability of appropriation set in law is that it does force people to plan and to get their stuff done. Generally, it works really well. Sometimes there are outliers, but and I would think that some of those outliers you wouldn't want moving forward. So just thought.
Jamie?
Just wanted to remind maybe Denny has forgotten, but the difficulties it can sometimes take to get even things that seem simple through the legislature, I would recommend that whatever we can do internally, we continue to do, and things get hung up even when they shouldn't. But if there is a legislative fix that staff think would be helpful going forward, I think the sooner we have that language so folks can digest it and be comfortable with it, would be better if we stand any chance of getting things done.
All right. So now let's move to a discussion on specific projects. We got through three last night. Let's move to PA-04, Northern Tallgrass Prairie National Wildlife Refuge from the Nature Conservancy. Any comments or thoughts on this one? Okay, how about PA-05, Cannon River Watershed Habitat Project Protect and Restoration Program with TPL, Great River Greening, Cannon River Partnership? Okay, PA-06, Accelerated Native Prairie Bank Protection, DNR. I would just say I really like this one. You know, Native Prairie is one of our most endangered habitats, and this seems to make a lot of sense to me for not many dollars. But that's just me. PA07, rim buffers for wildlife and water, from Bowser.
I don't want to, before we get too far.
Okay.
I had to catch up with, get back on page and read through my notes. Could we go back to Cannon River real quick?
Sure.
I need some help on this one, because this is one where I know some of you live down in that area, and it might be helpful. I don't spend a lot of time down in that part of the country, but it just seems to me that this is a highly developing, rapidly developing area. And the cost benefit, or the cost project for what we're going to get, I just am kind of curious on what the perspective is from some of the members on this one. Because I'm struggling with it, really.
Anyone have thoughts?
I'd just like to hear Mark in a little more detail.
Yeah, well, okay. You know, it's one thing, it's great that we're having watershed work groups come in and wanting to do watershed work, but when your watershed is so big, and not that the Cannon River is big, I mean, shit, the St. Croix River one's much bigger, but how much of this work, I mean, we're going in and being asked to buy a parcel here and a parcel there. I'm just wondering, did the level of effort on local planning by the communities, are they all bought in on this one? I mean, being the cities and the county, how much of this is about planning that should be being done inside the watershed, and are those communities on board? Let's see. I mean, are we really going to make an impact in that watershed with how far down the road they are in development, the speed in which they're development, and I just don't have a good sense of how engaged the communities are in that mission of protecting the watershed in their development plans. Does that make sense?
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Dan.
Well, maybe a trip back through the accomplishment plans from previous years, because this is phase 10, correct?
Yes.
And maybe there's some insight there as to, you know, how done.
I would just, Denny, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Holston, I actually think, you know, this watershed just touches in Dakota County a little bit, southern part of our county. It's actually more, I would not include it in the metro. It really extends, you know, down into Faribault and stuff. It's a little, I would say it's more of a rural setting. That Cannon River is a rural setting, and it is a neat river. I actually, I think that some of these, when we've had a while, what about, Mr. Chair, we're streaming, and these folks, I would imagine almost every one of them is listening into our conversation, at least I would hope they would. Is there a possibility that we can ask some of them to come in at the, you know, like say an hour from now as we going through these or something? That they could, I think Commissioner Holston's asking a number of good questions, and they're probably sitting out there on Facebook or wherever they are in the cloud listening, and maybe potentially have some answers. These are some good questions that would be good to ask. I'm not sure what the chair's thoughts are.
The chair is wondering how we decide who we're talking about versus who we want to talk to. I think we'd have to be very specific on we want these people to come back and have a conversation with them versus putting me in the position of trying to figure out if a comment meant you wanted to have a discussion. So if we're specific about it, I'm fine bringing them back if they're available. I know Jamie has her hand up. I would just say, Mark, one of the observations in a rapidly developing area is that you need someone to work on setting aside blocks of land so that the communities that develop end up having natural areas for wildlife and for recreational opportunities, or it'll be too late. It's already too late in some regards, but it's a fine balance between it costs more to do it in a developing area than it does out in a rural area. But the rural area, if you're looking at, say, restoration of a wetland, that wetland will probably be there in 10 years to do the work where the land in the Cannon River may not be. Because of the development pressure. And that's I don't think there's any right answer, but I think that's the dilemma.
And Mr. Chair, I totally agree. And this is one where, like I said, I know I said this the other day, I could fully fund this or I could zero it out. It's just a matter of, because I totally agree with you. This is one for me that's kind of a benchmarker one. Double down and do it all and get in there. Or, you know what, maybe it needs a little more local attention, commitment.
Okay. Jamie?
Yep, and I being from this area, I can provide some additional context for you, Mark, too. The watershed is engaged in the area. I see support in local county plans and county board meetings. It's really encompasses the heart of the southern Minnesota Lake Country. There's a lot of interest in a lot of people coming up from Iowa for this area, and a lot of people in the cities go north to go to the lake. A lot of people in southern Minnesota come to this area for the lakes, and with it sandwiched between a couple of regional centers with being south of the Twin Cities, but north of Rochester, and then also Mankato is a regional center. This area sees a lot of recreation, including, you know, hunting, fishing, lots of fishing. And these programs, the projects and the parcels that I see are increasing public lands to counties that are really in the 1-2% range for public access. And so knowing that this area is really an hour from a lot of people, and I know that's something that Representative Jamie Becker-Finn has focused on too, is having public lands where there's people or where it's easier to be accessible versus out in the middle of some of the more remote areas of Minnesota. Focusing monies on this area is a bit unique because there aren't many other programs that actually are focused in this area either. So just some additional context there to maybe help or not help the decisions.
I'm gonna go to Jamie B.
So I was just going to sort of highlight the same thing that the amount of public land in this area of the state is not very much. And I think, you know, I'm looking at their accomplishments and prior applications with creating some WMAs and expanding some that are already there. And, you know, as our discussion about fishing pressure and such before the meeting started, I think, you know, the same can be said for hunting pressure in areas that are close to more people. And so, you know, you look at some of our WMAs that are within an hour of where there are a lot of people, you end up having almost too much pressure and it becomes difficult for new folks or to get in and get your space. And I just think it's actually really important that we invest in these kinds of things so that we do have those options for folks so we don't have too much pressure in, you know, because then we end up in a Carlos Avery situation where you've got to license things separately for different places because you've just got so many people that want to be able to access things and not enough places for them to go.
Okay, David.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So it occurs to me that as we're talking about some of these projects and talking about the amount of money that hasn't been used in past appropriations, that it's just from my experience on LCCMR and now on Lisard Sam's that it happens quite often that there's a delay in getting boots on the ground and getting projects done. And so it's something that happens quite often in that they just take time, and that I agree with Denny from the standpoint of we just had 3 days of hearings and now we have questions, but I think it's hard for us to ask questions if the presenters aren't available to answer the questions, and which is what we had the hearings for. So while I'm fine with us going over each one of the projects again and asking questions, I don't know if we're going to be able to answer any of the questions if the people who are the presenters of the projects aren't here to answer the questions. So I don't know if we just continue going through each project again and saying, what do you think of this? Or if we just do what we did in the past and each one of us put down comments on the sheet and put the amount of money we think they should get and come back again and figure out what to do next. But that's up to you, Mr. Chairman, but it's just my suggestion that I think we're going to get a whole bunch of questions not answered because the people who are the presenters of the projects aren't here to answer the questions.
Well, as I said, I'm happy to take those that we can't answer among ourselves. And some of this is just our own impressions versus questions. Some are true questions, but if there are specific questions that we feel we need additional information, I'm happy to direct staff to try to get them back on the line today and see if we can do that. And Mark sent me a text saying they're happy to work on that. So I guess if you have those specific questions, as Mark, you did with this one, maybe Mark Johnson can work with them to get them back in an hour or two so we can have that conversation. Would that be good for you, Mark Holstein?
I'm not, more of my questions were to the members, just trying to get a perspective from them on something like this. Because like I said, I think it's a quality project. And there was nothing in the, it's the fundamental question that I was trying to pose out there. I live in an area that's rapidly developed. The WMAs that the couple in my area are encroached on heavily. One was actually, we had to sell because it had served no purpose anymore. And so looking at these areas where this world is going to change, that's just kind of where my mindset is right now. And this is one that highlighted for me that stress. Get in, do it, or, you know, maybe we check it and think differently.
So did you get the reaction from members you were looking for?
From those who spoke, yeah. No, it was good. And I much better about it.
That is the purpose of this, is to draw on our own expertise and try to help each other better understand before we get to the final allocation. Ashley?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark, I really appreciate hearing you just kind of think out loud about these things. It is really helpful to have a discussion and to talk about. I think in this case, something you're getting at is, what is the balance that the council wants to have in, you know, more rural landscapes versus landscapes that are closer to population centers? And that's certainly something that I go back and forth on and try ultimately to have a balance of with my recommendations. But I think overall it's kind of a philosophical question about you know, where do you want to put the funds? So anyway, just letting you know, I do appreciate this.
All right. Any other comments on this one? I'm not hearing a need to get the proposers on the line.
No.
Okay. We did accelerated Native Prairie Bank protection, PA07 rim buffers for wildlife and water. Tom.
Well, it took me that long to get my hand raised, so I'm still back.
But,
you know, I'm kind of thinking about our process right here, Mr. Chair, and wondering whether, given the time we have, and I guess we have all day, that maybe there's something to be said for. Maybe there's something on page 3 that everybody wants to talk about while we're still hot, and so maybe we ought to throw a little more open to different projects that some of us think that we ought to be talking about. That's just no reflection on what you're thinking about here, but
sure.
Thank you.
I guess I don't know how to do this other than going from top to bottom, because otherwise we're going to miss something. But Ron?
Well, yeah, I agree with Tom there. I think instead of going one by one, because there are just a few that I, for example, have questions about. I'm curious about what my fellow council members think. And so maybe instead of going one by one through each project, you go through one by one each council member to see if there's one or two that they have concerns about or questions about might expedite things. And for example, the one you just mentioned, the rim buffers, now there's one I was going to talk about, because based on what I can figure out, they have a lot of unspent money going back to 2016-2017, and now asking for $10 million. They haven't spent anything close to that. So I'm going to zero them out. That's where I'm at right now. I love buffers, but this is, to me, not is ridiculous to ask for $10 million when you haven't spent a lot of money. You have a lot of unspent money back to 2017. So there you go.
All right. I will take that as an invitation to ask other people what they think about this particular project, since Ron gave his opinion. The note I wrote was just that we should make sure they understand that the older money could be repurposed for non-CREP programs, since they came in wanting money for CREP with the old ones, and now they want new money for non-CREP. If we simply gave them the flexibility in accomplishment plan agenda or amendments, I think you're right, Ron. It's hard to justify new money. But Dan, you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have probably the polar opposite attitude about this that Council Member Shara has. The buffer program in my part of the state is extremely controversial. And from my perspective, you know, the state is forcing landowners to do the buffers, okay? That's water under the bridge, and I get that. But a lot of my constituents view that as a taking, and we can have a long, long conversation about that. I'm inclined to give them the full $10 million. Because anything that we can do to help landowners comply with a state law that will, in the intention of the state law, protect water and so forth and so on, I'm happy to help those landowners out. And I'm sure that there are people who have a different opinion than I do. Okay with me, because it does take some of the SWCDs and so forth a while to get the dollars on the ground. And this is money that's for outside of the CREP area, as I understand the proposal. I want to double check, make sure the CREP area does not include the Red River Valley, except maybe the very, very southern tip of the Red River Valley. And otherwise, you know, I have confidence that the money is going to be used well eventually. Thank you.
So, Mark Johnson, I'm just wondering if you see any issue with repurposing existing money to be more flexible in terms of non-CREP program dollars in different geographies, or if we are limited by the legislation behind it that would not allow us to do that.
Mr. Chair, we could look into that. We'd have to look at the actual appropriation language, and then in the accomplishment plan, if it's allowable within the appropriation language, then we'd also want to take a look at the accomplishment plan and see if there has to be an amendment necessary to allow that. But we can certainly look into that, sir.
Sure. If you could look into that and send us all a note, that would be great. Other comments about this specific project, Mark?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. And I kind of split the difference between Ron and Dan there. This is one where I think this is a really good program, and getting as many of these dollars. Listen, if we're going to make a difference in a conservation mode of habitat, we've got to get a lot of these dollars on private lands. And this is one of those that's going to help us get there to influence water quality, habitat, birds in the air. I believe they're going to get there, particularly with the volume of CRP that's coming off and about to come off the landscape. There's going to be an opportunity there. It's just a matter of, do they have the infrastructure, Bowser, SWCDs, to get on the landscape and lock these down? And I think those previous years, they're going to burn through that pretty quick. That'd be my expectation from what I've heard. Now, we might find something out differently, but the only thing for me is I would like to make sure that this gets distributed north-south and not concentrated specifically in one specific tight region. And I would like a north-south kind of a split in that western corridor.
Okay. Other comments? All right. What else would you like to talk about, since you don't want to go in the order in which they're listed? Feel free to pipe in on any project. Ashley?
I'm just curious if anyone has additional thoughts about the Martin County PA-10. I'm kind of going back and forth on that one. So just curious if anyone has an opinion on it.
Any opinions? I can tell you it didn't tickle my fancy, and I probably won't allocate anything to it. I thought there were better strategies, but Mark?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I like Ashley, I had similar reaction to it, and what was screaming to me is the void of a DNR comment on this. Do they want these? Where does this fit within their priorities? It's not in the, I know DU's working in it, but I didn't get a feel from them that this was a hot button item for them. And I just don't, I don't get a presence. I don't get a feel from DNR on it either.
Jamie, yes.
Yeah, I've had some similar thoughts on that as far as the context of this, the watershed and the program in the state and how important it is for the bigger picture. On the flip side, I also really like the local support for projects and it's not just the DNR deciding which projects to do. It's having the local support. It has the leverage of the Fox Lake Conservation League and local DU members and volunteers and a lot more on this project than any of the other programs that we've seen. And not saying that there aren't this very similar support, but I really did appreciate that aspect of this proposal. So that's something I also considered.
Other comments on this? Other projects? What about some of the water projects, the lower Otter Tail River Corridor habitat restoration, where we saw a $4.5 million request, which is the start of $30 million worth of projects. Dan, you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My internet connection is somewhat unstable today, but I want to comment about the Fox.
Yeah, Dan, you're really struggling to hear.
I think that it's really important in this process that we understand that this is their fate. I'll try to come back later. I'm gonna switch to a different room. I'm in the same place that I am.
Okay, I'll go to Tom and then come back to you and
I'll try it later.
See if we can get a better connection. Tom? You have to unmute yourself.
How's that?
Good.
Good. And I appreciated the comments on RIM. The basics being that I too believe that one of the real problems that we have in southern and west, southwestern and western Minnesota is if we're going to clean them up for wildlife and fisheries, that RIM projects are particularly important. The one major project that I believe is important for Minnesota forests is FA 02 Minnesota Forest for the Future. We're on phase 8. This is close to my heart because this was my bill how many ever years ago that we did this, but the basics of it were we were going to prevent fragmentation of our forests, whether they be in southeastern Minnesota, you know, on the oak areas, or just good old the Arrowhead, and the other thing, of course, is to try to use conservation easements to join areas of public land so that that they won't be fragmented. We don't see a lot of forest projects, and I think one of the reasons we don't is that I think that this particular FAO2 takes care of a lot of that. For many years, we saw Cass County putting good projects together, and they were kind of ignored to some extent. And there's other forest projects specifically that can be used, but I believe that funding this is an important part of how we can protect our forests, and we don't have to have necessarily a lot of projects, because it accomplishes much of again, fragmentation and being able to use conservation easements
to join areas of public land.
Ashley?
Thank you.
Yep. Ashley, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious if anyone has information on what's going on with the 2016 and 2017 appropriations of this one. Looks like they've spent out 2018 and 2019, but there's not a final report, and it says amount spent to date is $0 on 2016 and 2017 on this one.
Sandy, do you have any input there? Or I had a similar question. It looked like they hadn't spent past money, and you know, I'm a big supporter of this generally, but my concern or my thought was that they have money to spend, and this might be a year they don't need it and let them spend so that they actually have dollars coming in and going out a little quicker as they catch up. But Sandy?
Yes. Which one? Again, I'll pull the file here.
Forest of the Future.
Oh, okay. So what's happening here is they have a new project manager when Richard Peterson left, and she's coming on board and getting up to speed. Can I just take a minute and pull the file and specifically read? Is that okay?
But, yeah, Jamie S. had a comment, so go ahead, Jamie.
It wasn't specific to this, but I just wanted to say I appreciated Member Saxog's comments on the forest project, this one specifically, but then just in general, wanting to hear from the group on the different forest projects. I'm from the southern Minnesota, so I'm used to corn and soybeans and prairies and wetlands, and so hearing from folks that know a little bit more about the north part of the state, I appreciate. The one thing, I support grazing into as a management tool for prairies. I support logging for a management tool for the forest. And so hearing about some of these projects from some others would be very beneficial.
Mark?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. And like Senator Saxog, when I was in the DNR, I spent a considerable amount of time on this particular program and recognize how important that fragmentation issue is. But honestly, when I saw this proposal, I was a little disappointed. Not completely, because when you go into the parcel list of what they're talking about, it's exactly, on first blush, it's exactly what we're talking about, where there's a 200 acre piece in the woods that's a private land, and it's going to get subdivided into a bunch of 10 acre parcels. That's the kind of fragmentation that leads us to having a lot of struggles in forest management. So when I see a 200, a 185, a 180, a 319, then that's the kind of stuff I think this program should be doing. But when I see a 14 acre parcel, a 17 acre parcel, a 19 acre parcel, okay, now I feel like we're chasing stuff that they could probably do internally if it's really a critical thing. Now, again, I don't know about the details behind these. Maybe they really are critical parcels, but I just, when I see a 14 and a 19 and a 17, that's not what this program was intended to go after.
Tom, I'm going to go back to you since I know you're on this point. But you're muted. Tom, you're muted.
This particular project, it brought it back as soon as I saw the young woman who was presenting this is that this was Dick Peterson's baby from start to finish, and he did a outstanding job, and there wasn't anybody, and Mark will probably both agree with me that he made Forest for the Future go. He set up the criteria and how it was going to run, and what's happening right now is not any type of dissolution of this, but it's going to take a while to do what Mr. Peterson did in this particular area. Again, though, it's important that we have money to do the types of things that we're talking about. I also appreciate what Mark said when it comes to 14 acres is not probably something that they couldn't do as an individual. But again, this is what I was talking about. There's fragmentation, but then there's the whole idea with conservation easements, whether it's fee title or permanent easements, of joining areas for management purposes. Sometimes those are only 14 acres. They might be 14 acres of road, for all we know. And so anyway, I guess I would encourage patience on this. And again, as everybody knows, I think that this is the key DNR forest management area for our particular Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Thank you.
And Sandy, I see you're back. Do you have a little information for us?
Sorry, I can't raise my hand because of my function in the Zoom okay. meeting. But it looks like Forest for the Future 16 and 17, the 17 has a final report that was submitted, and the 16 one will be coming in a month. So the other spreadsheet kind of gives a little bit, the spreadsheet without the groupings by program kind of gives maybe the information, different information.
So you're saying the 16 that shows no dollars spent actually is spent all their dollars?
They are close to closing out and spending all of their dollars. The people who have final reports that are pending or will be submitting final reports in the next month, we're not required to submit status updates.
Okay. All right. Other comments on this? Dan, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to the Fox Lake, Martin County thing. One of the things that I like about this proposal is the fact that it's someone different than the usual groups. And one of the things that we've talked a lot about is bringing in, either through CPL or through this part of the process, you know, some other groups that have got a passion, they got a lot of local support. Member Swenson talked about being from Southern Minnesota and how she likes much of what they're doing down there. I would encourage us to make sure that we look favorably on these to try to get more groups to come in and do this stuff. And the fact that DNR didn't speak up on this, you know, if they don't like something, then they should come forward and tell us. I assume that if they don't like something, then they should come and tell us. Otherwise, I assume that they're okay with it. The fact that the DNR is not testifying for something means absolutely nothing to me. So that's just kind of how I come down on this stuff. So thank you.
Okay. Did you have another comment on the RIM?
No, just that I think it's, I just think it's a good program. You know, former Chair McNamara can tell you a lot about RIM and buffers and so forth in the time that he's been in the legislature. Danny and I, we worked a lot. People can say what they want, you know, about what happened in the legislature with regards to funding for CREP. But I think that the people at Bowser will tell you that Chair McNamara and others were leaders in trying to secure the full $200 million you know, to get the leverage for the federal dollars. Danny worked really, really hard on that stuff. So I just want to make sure that we're doing the right things here. And I think that this is one of those. Thank you.
Okay. Other specific projects people would like to discuss? So I'd like to go back to Lower Otter Tail River Corridor habitat and see what people have to say about that. Denny, did you have a...
What's the number on that, Mr. Chair? What number is that,
please? That one is HA03. Denny?
Mr. Chair, seeing how you asked for comments on that one, it's one that I actually funded relatively significantly. I thought it was an extremely strong proposal for a new one. And I really like that putting those oxbows back in the Red River Valley watershed. It was unfortunately a huge mistake that was made many decades ago. And I thought for a local watershed, it was an extremely strong proposal. And I made a note, it's going to probably include a lot of our future costs, but they are accessing a lot of federal money for the other aspects of it. And it's really going to create some great habitat. And interestingly, it was in the southern part of the Red River Valley, which arguably also is gets into that prairie region more significantly. Well, not that's not a good comment. I mean, that whole Red River Valley is great prairie, actually. I'm being a little more partial because it's got more pheasants down there now. Sorry, that actually probably came out.
Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this may be a fallacy, but I think it's a good project too. It's request number one, part number one. When we get something like this, are we to some extent gonna think about terms that, well, they need planning money, but are they gonna get anything done this year other than planning? Just a question, staff can answer or whatever, thank you.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot of this as planning money. It sounded like they were past the planning phase and into the implementation side. I was a little troubled with the lack of commitment from the watershed district to a significant match, that they were just looking for outside money to do this, that, you know, it raised my... it raised questions to me that they plan on coming back, but they didn't want to make any commitments about their own commitment to the project, even though they have taxing authority. So it was just, it raised a question in my head.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. You know, that was on the front end of the discussion. I really liked it. I mean, the kind of work that they were going to do, the restoration of it, the fact that it is the Soil and Water Conservation District and the Watershed District, the two of them working collaboratively, but the lack of local government, I mean, the county city effort, why that isn't there, was surprising. But the only thing that really got my attention is I just want the council to know, we fund this, you're in it. We're gonna own this one all the way to the end. And that's a bad thing. It's just make sure that this is a project you wanna commit this council to for a number of years.
Okay, other comments? Denny.
Mr. Chair, am I remembering this one wrong? I thought the proposer said that they are going to commit, because they have taxing authority, talking future. It wasn't part of their proposal on the written part, but I thought he verbally said they were going to commit potentially from $1 to $5 million over the long term. Am I remembering a different one? I thought it was this one.
Does anyone have memory? Maybe we could have staff send them an email and ask them to respond and get that answer back to us.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, real quick, there is in the budget document, it says 13%, 13.8 leverage as a percentage of the request, that they're going to leverage 13%, which is pretty high comparative to wherever else. I'm still trying to find out where that is coming from. Looks like it's coming, well, BRRWD, that's the
Buffalo Red River Watershed District.
The Buffalo Red River Watershed, yeah. So there is some, there's more than I thought there was.
Yeah.
In my first look.
Okay.
If you look at page two, you know, it talks about the matches and stuff for 2021 from the Army Corps of Engineers and from the Watershed District. Yeah. And they've talked, I'm reading 14% match, but I might be seeing something different than Amber Holston.
13.8, 14. It's just a dollar.
It's a decimal issue.
Right. Round it up.
Ashley?
Well, I don't want to interrupt the discussion about match because I think that's important. My question had more to do with, you know, in looking at this project, it's designated basically as prairie. And I have a tendency, for whatever reason, when I get done with my allocations, to have so much more in the prairie section of the state than anywhere else. And so I struggle to, obviously I don't think it's going to be even, but you know, just for other members, I'm curious to hear, generally speaking, how they're looking at the different areas of the state and the different types of habitats, and hearing if that weighs into how you're balancing out different projects. Because I think that's a struggle for me, is that the prairie work tends, I tend to give a lot more to that up front and then realize that I'd like to spread it out to different types of habitats for a little more balance.
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
To Ashley's point, you know, I get what you're saying, and to the one we were just talking about, the Lower Otter Tail River. Is it in a prairie? Is that what it's? I'm trying to look through. Is it designated? It's designated prairie.
Yes, you know, it is.
And that's what it is, because it's going to be 850 acres of easements that's going to be put into prairie. But it's really, you could easily put this over into your waters category. Because it's about, this is the first step of redoing the river there. And you're not going to get the river redone without this. So I'd feel comfortable putting it over into waters if it helps you balance it out.
I guess, you know, one of my struggles was just, you know, 3,000 acres and $35 million. Just seemed like an overall big number. There are a lot of other ways to protect 3,000 acres. I recognize that we have no way to quantify the value of stream restoration in that, in terms of upstream and downstream as well. So I'm really curious as to perspectives on this. If there are any others. I think the conversation's been great. Denny?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the flood control, the federal money to fix their huge mistakes is to correct some of the challenges we've seen in April and May when we look on TV and see what's happening in Fargo-Moorhead. At the same time, then when they correct that, we've got a chance for this habitat money, which, as Member Holston said, we can tap and do great work. I think that's, I get where it's really expensive, but unfortunately those mistakes are expensive ones to correct in the flood control. And that's kind of separate. I hear where you're coming from. The total cost of the project is huge, but our habitat's not as out of line. To Member Peter's point, I want to spend some money up north. I want to spend some money in the, on the forestry. I think Senator Saxhog has advocated for that forestry, and we do need to fix some things because of the price of timber and all that's changed, and we got to do that. But we got to admit the reality. The prairie region in southwestern Minnesota is the one that got 99% of the wetlands drained, and the opportunities to fix that water quality and to see that water flooding the landscape out there right now, that's where our opportunities are golden. That's my thoughts on that.
All right, Ashley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Danny, to your point, I agree. I mean, that's what I'm wanting to hear more of, is just generally speaking, as you're looking at these projects overall, you know, what are kind of the guiding thoughts you have on how to prioritize things? Because, you know, most of these projects are excellent projects. And the questions come down to how do you prioritize? And I think there's kind of go back and forth on that, right? Like the wanting to, I want a balance between, you know, taking advantage of opportunities we have right now that are kind of urgent in terms of getting those landscapes. But I also think about the things that we still have, especially when it comes to forest, like protecting and ensuring that we have, there's high quality habitat that still exists right now. So anyway, I just wanna hear more discussion about that because I find that a really interesting conversation and how do you balance that and how do you prioritize?
Other comments? Do we want to talk about City of Mankato? Or is that talked out?
I wouldn't mind chatting about it, Mr. Chair. This is Senator Lang.
Okay.
I guess maybe not so much the City of Mankato, but they did bring up, you know, I'm sure you remember the discussion we had last year about the perceived, I guess ideally what I would like to see is if a group that's out, you know, looking for an allocation of funds wants to use a local option sales tax as a match, that those voters have voted specifically for that, that it hasn't been changed after the fact. And hopefully that if that's the intent or if that's the funding stream that they want to use, that it would be specific to the project and it isn't, you know, I was surprised they came back with it again this year. You know, I think the council as a whole, you know, we all kind of talked about it and had a fairly unified view of it, I thought, last year. I don't know, I guess I'd like to hear what some of the other folks have to say. Using a local option or to hear.
Yep, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mark.
Yeah, Senator Lang. See, I guess local option sales tax was something that really came in after I left, so I'm not familiar with the sensitivity or the debate that you had last year. And I guess I need a little perspective of
what. Yeah, I can probably provide that a little bit. So that's something, you know, somewhat recent within the legislature that allows both counties and municipalities to, in a couple of different ways, they can either go through the election process through on the ballot so the voters vote for specific projects, that the community, when they go through the process, has a resolution that either goes to the city council or the commissioners, the county commissioners. The resolution is specific, and when it's written in such a way that's, you know, prescribed by law. So all the projects are very specific when it comes to dollar amounts, the amount of time the tax will be collected, the specific dollar amounts that go into each one of these projects. And what ends up happening, and this is, the law is written in such a way that it prescribes to the resolution. Now, inherently, that makes a little bit of a problem when you start talking about a resolution that's been changed after the fact or after the voters have voted on something like this. In Mankato's case, what ended up happening was that the voters approved the local option sales tax that was supposed to be good through 2022 for a specific dollar value for a specific amount of time. In 2017, that was changed and it was extended. I have an issue with that specifically. Is it legal? Technically, yes. Do I think it speaks to the intent of the law, to the intent of the way that it was, you know, those municipalities are going to use that? I don't believe so. I guess that the question I would ask the rest of the council is, what do you feel, you know, when it comes to local option sales tax match, what does the rest of the council feel about that? And should it be specific to a project or should it be generally speaking? Because in the city of Mankato's case, that was really the heart, you know, the hard sell that I had with the language. And I brought it up yesterday that the city had said, well, the language was, it was specifically vague is the language. And I went back and watched the video and got the terminology. And I thought, well, that's really kind of a, I don't know, as a legislator, and this is maybe something where Representative Finn or Fabian or Senator Tomassoni might want to chime in too and say, you know, when it comes to intents of law and what the writers of the law are trying to accomplish. And, you know, honestly, when it comes to the integrity of the council, of us as a non-elected council, that's I just would like some input from the rest of the council.
So we heard 90% of what you said. You were breaking up just a little bit, but I think everyone got the gist of what your concern is. Thoughts? I guess I would just say, I think that's up to the local community to sort out. And I'm not sure that as a council, if they think that what they're doing is legal, that we're in a position to opine on whether what they're doing is or isn't. I have concerns about the project beyond the sales tax component and how they want to fund their side of it. But it's hard for me to know what the issue is with the local community and a local option sales tax. And my guess is if elected officials go further than they should with that, either they're going to be sued or they're not going to be in office very long. So I'm not sure that I feel comfortable weighing in on that issue. I'm sensitive to it. I think the project is very expensive for questionable habitat value, and it's more a flood control project, and I'm not sure that's the appropriate place for us to be spending our dollars. And so it's easy for me to zero out the project based on that versus having to figure out whether or not the local community is crossing some line. but that's me. Others, thoughts? Mark?
I agree with what you're saying. And this kind of one, this one has always just kind of sat funny with me, because it just looks like it's a stormwater management issue. But if you want to couch it as a restoration, then it's getting back into that question where I was having about the Cannon River, and not to use Cannon River as an example, it's probably not the right one, but you've got these urban developing corridors and the project's going to cost a boatload of money to do it. What are we getting from this? I don't see much, but that's me personally. But when I say that, at the same time, I go back one project, two projects to the Shell Rock River. And so to Senator Lang's concern about local option sales tax, I see Shell Rock has been doing it for nearly 10 years using local option sales tax. Yeah, since 12. I mean, this community has really ponied up a lot of energy in to work on their issues, and now they're coming to us. I know they've got other monies outstanding, and I've got to review that. We've got to go through their outstanding dollars, unspent dollars. But just when I see a community who's been as aggressive as they have been matching, like, I kind of want to support them. Not to confuse the issue Mankato and Shell Rock, but I know I just did.
That's okay. Other comments on either Shell Rock or Mankato? Other comments on any other project? Dan?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I don't have a comment on another project, and if you want to move on, I do have another thing I would like to talk about just very, very briefly.
Sure.
Okay. This discussion today, quite frankly, is helpful, but for consideration going into the future, it would be even more helpful if this conversation happened on the front end. Then the proposers could listen in and hear what some of our concerns are, and then they could come to make their proposal to the council, and they could address some of those concerns, and we could maybe be a little more efficient. Just my thoughts.
Okay. Tom? Tom, you're on mute. We can't see you, but I see your hand up.
How's that?
I can hear you now.
Now you can see me. Okay. Again, I don't want to get in the position, which I just am putting myself in, of advocating for northern Minnesota, northeastern Minnesota, but I think the Mississippi Headwaters Habitat Corridor projects, they're in their fifth phase, and I think they've come along over the years. They were at a point where they really didn't even have any staff, and now they do have staff. And of course, what we're talking about is Mississippi River watershed down to Little Falls, and that's a significant part of the watershed for the state of Minnesota. If we're talking about clean water, and when we're talking about watersheds here, we aren't just talking about, of course, the shoreland of the actual Mississippi River, we're talking about all the watersheds that lead into it. And it was kind of interesting because we just got the information last night about HA-06, protecting the Minnesota's lakes of outstanding biological significance. And of course, about two-thirds of those are into the Mississippi watershed too. So it's important for northern Minnesota and for southern Minnesota, actually, because this water all flows down to the metropolitan area ultimately, that we're thinking about what needs to happen there to ultimately protect our waters and then the fisheries and whatever. So anyway, that's just my comment. I thought, I may again disagree, but I'll probably fund them, not to the full, but it'll be significant. Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
To Senator Saxok's point, you got the, I'm just looking for your perspective. You spoke specifically about the Headwaters Board. You touched on the Protect Minnesota Lakes, which was HA-06. And then there's another one. Is that seven? No, that's right. Which one was it? You had about three or four up in that area that all kind of overlap. Kind of all doing the same thing, but with different perspectives, like 05 and 06. 04. Yeah, so it's HA-04, HA-06, and HA-05. 4, 5, and 6. Do you have one? Is the Mississippi Headwater the one you like the most between the three? Or yeah, so HA-04 was the fisheries habitat protection, Central Lakes. And they're all kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, please.
Oh, okay. I think that the Mississippi Headwaters Board is a bit of an institution. You know, I end up telling this story every year of how the federal government was going to take over the upper Mississippi management, and Senator Lessard. I think it's the best thing that he ever did. Talk the federal government and basically letting them be done by the local units of government. And in fact, he always told the story, and every year we had to tell that too, about how Jimmy Carter called the senator up and said, "Hey, I'm going to let you do this, so don't screw it up." In essence, I'm sure Jimmy Carter sounded different. But anyway, so there's been ups and downs with the Mississippi Headwaters Board, but I believe they're in a good place right now. And so I guess I would believe that they're the key management factor in the upper Mississippi Headwaters.
Jamie B.
Yeah, I would just encourage, you know, I didn't see these as being all the same thing. And I think sort of to get at what Ashley was speaking to, you know, this is the area of the state I'm most familiar with as well. And I'm also really a map person. And if you really look at where the different work is being proposed, it's across a pretty large area, and there isn't really that much overlap. So, you know, I don't want us to think, oh, well, we funded this one project, so I can, you know, check off caring about northern Minnesota on my list. I really think the details are important, and they're all you know, good projects that do have different targets and different goals. So I just wanted to weigh in with that, because I like all of them. So
that is a problem. Liking all of them and not having enough money. One of the things that everyone has to consider is, you know, do you spread the money around? Do you concentrate it and zero out other projects? And I would just say, you know, it is okay to fully fund. It is okay to zero out based on what your perspective is of the priorities and how that lines up. And we have had put on the spreadsheet sort of a categorical split out, so you can see as you're allocating what you're doing region wise and type of project wise to help you sort of answer the question, am I funding anything in the north when I get all done with this, or is everything in the south and I should spread it out? It's just a tool to help you think about it. But philosophically, there is nothing about this that says you should absolutely fund everything, or you should fully fund something, or you should not zero something out. And we all have to make that decision. By zeroing things out, you're allowing yourself to put more priority to other projects and build more momentum for specific projects. And that's part of the discussion that we can certainly have. But I encourage you all to do what you think is best versus what you think makes sense for other people looking at what you're doing. These are really tough choices because we don't have a whole bunch of projects that we can easily say, well, let's just not do those, because that gives us more money for other things. That there are, and we all would have a different opinion, but there are very few of these projects that truly, if they got done, we could look back and say, wish we hadn't done that and done something else. So it really becomes how much emphasis you want to put in one place versus another. And then we work that out among ourselves. And that's my perspective. If others have perspectives about that, I'd be welcome to have them. David?
So as long as you brought it up, Mr. Chairman, since many of the projects, and we discussed this yesterday, many of the projects have money left over from the previous years, and because we have three times as much in requests as we have in funding, my recommendation is going to be 34% for every project. And I realize that might be a little bit simplistic, but at the same time, we're going to find out whether or not people will be able to continue to do the projects at that level of funding, and all the funding, all the projects will be funded on my list. Now, people can agree with that or not agree with that, but I think it's a way of actually making allocations that are fair to every, and it might actually flush out some of the real urgent needs, and it might show that there's a possibility of funding all the projects, and some of the money that hasn't been used in the past won't go wasted into the future. So that's what my recommendation is going to be. And that you can take that for what it's worth. But I think it's a good way to be fair to everybody, and it's a good way to be able to solve some of the dilemmas that we're talking about right now.
Okay. Other thoughts? Jamie S.
Just one more thing that I'm looking at specifically for this year is the programs that have requested extensions due to COVID and the ones that have kept their fund request the same or more than previous years, ones that have actually considered if they can actually get the work done, or even haven't come to us every single year with the same amount or more, that they're actually putting thought into the, making sure that they can actually get the work done. I think that's something that I hadn't really looked at as much previously that I'll be looking at a lot closer this year.
Okay, Dan?
Real quickly, I respect Senator Tomassoni a great deal. And I think that on one level, he's correct. What I'm concerned about is that if that becomes some sort of a norm for the council, proposers in the future will inflate their numbers and they'll, you know, get a percentage, but it's going to be an unrealistic number that they submit to us possibly.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Dan, I think, that's happening now.
I don't disagree with you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a really good discussion. I really appreciate folks talking this out. I think for me, where the strike, because I won't be doing an across the board percentage, and that's not to say what's right or wrong, but for me, I have seen projects on the ground that look beautiful, but don't actually result in more wildlife in that area. And so for me, you know, when I'm looking at projects, considering all these different key pieces, one of the biggest ones is, how do we know that it's working? How do we know that these habitat projects are actually resulting in more wildlife? And so I think that's a struggle, because we don't fund the research to look at the monitoring. But it's also a critical piece for me to make sure that we're using the funds really effectively. So I don't know that that helps with it, with this discussion, but it is something that I think about a lot, because you know, over the years, I've seen a lot of projects that look really good to the eye, but then after a few years, you're still not seeing the wildlife show up.
Dan?
Yeah, real quickly on that too, Jamie, Ashley, excuse me, I appreciate your comment there. And I've asked that question in the past, and not necessarily at Lessard Council, but even in committee and so forth. And you asked that of the proposer groups, you know, DU, PF, and I don't want to necessarily pick on them. You know, so how many more pheasants do we have? And I think Member Shara has asked that question in our council meetings of those proposers. And the question kind of gets dodged to a certain degree. And I recognize that there's all kinds of other factors involved in increasing the wildlife numbers. But, and I totally agree with you, but I don't know how we get a good response from the proposers on that. That's a source of frustration for me and has been. But thank you for raising that issue.
Mark?
I was, I'm going to back up a little bit into my thoughts, because I got a bunch of comments I wanted to talk about here at the end. But to Ashley's point, I think it's important for the council to realize that the length of time it takes to do a lot of this work. We've been at this now for a little over 10 years. We are just starting to see the benefit on the landscape. The time it takes to acquire a piece, whether it's fee or easement, do a restoration, go out and do, get the roving crews up and running and get them all out there and getting all of that infrastructure in place, getting all of those people working in a line takes time. And to actually see it on the landscape takes time. And we're just starting to see it. But those deliverables that Ashley talks about are important, and they're going to be critically important as we look out 10 more years. And not that that is, folks, I'm a temporary guy here. I got put on just to fill the hole for 1 year. But I'm kind of looking out at this 10 years from now and recognizing what's happened to our natural resource funding streams in government that have, whether it's to the DNR or Bowser or the lack of bonding dollars to parks, it, just all of it together, we're going to be in a 10 years from now, when the funding stream of this ends, asking the legislature, I'm assuming we're going to be asking the legislature to reauthorize this, and deliverables are going to be important. And what's happening on that landscape is going to be important. And I just think we're just getting to starting to see it. And I will tell you, I feel so good about what's in these documents, and I feel so good about what I'm seeing going on out there. The professional expertise growth, the growth of the experts out on that landscape, is making me feel good about where we are today and how this is moving forward. I mean, whether we talk about the NGOs, whether it's PF and really focusing in on acquisition, or TNC and their work in the prairie, and that prairie landscape and the professionalism that they're developing, it's really heartwarming to see that void get filled. Because when I got into the legislature in the early 90s, I mean, I worked on DNR and Bowser's budget, and the stress and the anxiety that we had inside the committee, and the historical conflict that the DNR has with the public. And I'm not trying to pick on the DNR, because folks, remember, the DNR has two gloves. One is to be a conservation organization out there and trying to go out there and do the work. But at the same time, we tell them to go be regulators, go be a hammer on that landowner who doesn't do it right or does it wrong. And that gets us into, it gets the agency crosswise with the public and the legislature. But let's be honest, the funding to the DNR for the white kinds of work we wanted to see done on the landscape wasn't occurring. And that's why this, in part, this amendment came forward. And that's why we've got these dollars. And seeing the NGOs and the SWCDs, boy, watching the SWCDs and the work that they're accomplishing out there, that is exactly what we're hoping to see. And so I'm kind of rambling. I'm kind of just telling you, I'm just so proud to see what has been accomplished and what is going on out there, and the passion within the people bringing these projects forward, and the work and the commitment that they have to getting this stuff done. To Ashley's point about distributive, personally, I could take all the money and dump it into the prairie and wetland area and walk away and be happy. Now, I'm not going to do that. But that's where I kind of just see the greatest need and greatest impact, where we could have the greatest impact with these dollars the fastest. That's kind of where I'm at.
Jamie, yes?
Sure, yeah, just to add on to what Mark was saying, and to answer Ashley's question there too, things that I'm looking at, in 15 years, what is this legacy going to mean for Minnesota? And I think about what future headlines could be. I mean, wouldn't it be great to see reestablished prairie grouse to the historic ranges? You know, Minnesota becomes the number one destination for waterfowlers over the Dakotas, or one of the greatest conservation comebacks in history, the iconic Minnesota moose. So today, what I'm looking at is what is urgent, what projects move the needle with a definable measurement of success as one of the big ones. Like Ron said yesterday, and then Denny said today, where's the most degradation? What regions could use the most help? What projects have support shown, as shown through leverage and with partners? And what program really does it best? At the end of the day, what outcomes are we going to be able to look back and say, we achieved that because of this legacy amendment? And so looking at the fine print and looking through all the numbers, at the end of the day, that's kind of the overarching goal that I'm looking at, or overarching context that I'm looking at. Hope that helps.
Other comments? Any other project anyone wants to talk about before we talk about how we're going to go forward? I would just thank you all for going through this today. I think this is the first time we've ever just had the ability, we've created the ability for ourselves to, without pressure of decision, talk generally about observations on projects. I know I found it helpful. I hope the rest of you did, and I think we ought to take Dan's comment about, are there other places in our process we can do the same thing? And I think that's, as we go forward, a good thing for us to consider. The next step is everyone does their scoring. And I am assuming that there will be some difference of opinion. And everyone isn't going to do 34% as David indicates he thinks is fair, which is fine. Which means we're going to get back some scoring, and Ron and I are going to have to take a look at it and figure out what to come back with to you as a chair's proposal for your consideration to start the process. But if there are any guidelines that anyone would like to provide us to think about as we do that, and it will be Ron and I, it's not going to be the chair that alone makes a proposal to you, and it will be in consultation with the vice chair. If there are any thoughts that you have about how you want to see that, or any strategy, this would be a great time to give us some advice. It's hard because we do not know what we're going to see. And, you know, last year it was relatively easy because everybody was very close in terms of support of projects and even dollar amounts to projects. That's not always been the case. So we'll have to take what we get and then come back to you, show you what you did and come back. But any guidance would be welcome at this point.
Mr. Chair.
Mark. Yeah.
Not one of the things that I think we're all going to experience and you're going to see at the end is specifically with the outstanding dollars. It's going to influence how people plug their appropriations in. You know what I mean? The unspent previous dollars. I would suggest that you might want to put a subcommittee together and do a deeper dive over the next couple of weeks so that we have a deeper understanding and answers to that so that when we do come back together, we can actually see, because people's recommendations are going to be influenced by it. I've gotten that impression, and that's not a bad thing. It is what it is. But I think we need to have a better understanding of what is really going on those unspent dollars so that we can refine our recommendations later. That would just be a recommendation. Put a subcommittee together, or you and Ron do a deep dive with staff.
Yeah, the challenge with subcommittees here is always the open meeting law. And who's part of that subcommittee and whether or not we have to have open meetings and the complexity of that. But I'm happy to work with staff to get within a week or two a little deeper dive on what's outstanding money that's committed versus outstanding money that's outstanding and get that back to you before you get your scoring in. I think staff probably has a better feel for that than any of us and can get to the point quicker if you're comfortable letting staff do that with Ron and I providing them some guidance.
Mr. Chair, that's fine. I would like to have seen a deeper dive into it. And sooner the better.
Mark, do you see any issue with getting that done?
Mr. Chair and members, we can jump into it. The deadline for the appropriate for the recommendations for the council members is the 14th of September. So that's comes up pretty quick. It's what, a week from next Monday. We can put together a memo and get it to you all. It might be that if you want a deeper dive on it, we could have something deeper for the next meeting or later. But it, what we probably look at right now is where those dollars are, which ones are what dollars are unspent or appropriations are unspent, which ones are factored in with in that they're just acquisition, which ones have actually restoration enhancement factored in, because a lot of times they, you know, that makes them longer term dollars, longer term for use. And then also which ones just aren't reporting that they haven't spent their dollars or that they have spent their dollars yet. Yeah. But we could get something out this next, we could get something together this next week. It'd probably take us till mid to late week, probably late in the week to get it done.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I wouldn't do all of them. I mean, I'd leave the discretion to you to identify which ones that I think you kind of know which ones we're looking at. I mean, I have somebody out there with a couple thousand bucks left on the bottom line isn't what I think we, my point is don't do them all. I would say use your discretion and focus in on the big ones. Or
someone that got money last year for the first time, it's not worth doing any work on.
I agree.
Because they've just started to spend it. So let's talk for a second about the schedule, Mark. Our next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, the 1st of October, which is when we will discuss the allocation. That's 2.5, then the deadline for people to get their spreadsheets back is 2.5 weeks before that date. Is it necessary to have 2.5 weeks to take the spreadsheets and put all the scoring into one spreadsheet and get us the information? Or could we potentially push that 14th deadline back a few days?
Mr. Chair, there's a potential we could. It does get pretty crazy with that. I think I'd like to, if it's okay with you, have Joe and Sandy pipe in a little bit on their thoughts with this too, because there's different perspectives to it.
Sure.
I think we can push the date back. I don't want to speak for Joe because he's going to be doing the number crunching around it, I think. But everybody has to meet the deadline then, because sometimes what happens is, you know, we got one or two stragglers that holds up the calculations. So that wouldn't be good if we postpone it a week.
So in other words, you said the 14th, but you really do it on the 21st because some people don't get their numbers in right.
Not so to name names.
maybe the rule is if you don't get your numbers in, you have a one-day grace period that staff will bug you, and then your numbers don't count. And that would sort of force everyone to get their numbers in, I'll bet.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, as long as everybody fills in the spreadsheet correctly and we don't really have to follow up with members on, you know, did you mean this or that, it goes pretty smoothly. It's just having the time to follow up, because then somebody might not be in town and then we have to wait for them to get back in town so we can hear. So it's not that difficult. It's just having the time in case we have to follow up.
So if we said, I'm just throwing something out, if we said the 18th, which is that Friday, and members understood that if there is a technical issue, they'll be chased for maybe a day, but then their numbers won't count. members that it'd be up to you to actually meet the deadline and commit to meeting that deadline. Would that work for everyone? That would give us a little more time to have this kind of information on past appropriations and such in our hands before having to do the scoring or the allocation. I'm seeing Jamie B nod her head. Others feel okay about that? Everyone's nodding their heads. So,
David, if you're going to do that, if you're going to do that, I would just if you're going to give staff one day to bug members, I would probably suggest you do it for the 17th. That's a Thursday. They can do the bugging on Friday, and then we're done, and they don't have to worry about bugging somebody on Saturday.
Okay. 17th is fine.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just to remind you that, okay, that so it would be the following week, basically, that where you and Ron would have time to work with us to figure out your chair's proposal. I know you'll probably want to discuss that with us beforehand and with Ron beforehand, but sure. It shortens your window for that consideration too on the chair's proposal.
And the chairs will accept that challenge to give everyone additional time to review additional information, which everyone is feeling will help frame the right allocation decisions for everyone. Denny?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Executive Director Johnson or your staff, probably Sandy. Ms. Smith, if you could, that FRE01, I mentioned it before. I really think because of Mr. Peterson leaving, Greg Hawk had that project wrong. In the proposal, he mentions unspent appropriation of $1 million, and he mentioned in his presentation the Southeast Forest. There was a statewide forest enhancement project we funded last year, and it got 1.8 some odd change million. I'm wondering if he's not aware of that. And that specifically, if I remember the proposal right, was for internal staff funding at the DNR level, not for contracting. His new proposal is for contracting. If you could clarify with him and send out to us, is there a reason why they, are they going to use this money? Does this money need to be repurposed, the 1.8? Are they intending to use it for staff? I'm nervous that he might not know it's there. Thank you.
Mark?
Mr. Chair, yeah, we do have, I did get an email from Mr. Hoke this morning, and we'll forward that to you, Denny, as well as the rest of the members. That, so it'll explain it, but that project last year was for the Forest Roving Crew. Unfortunately, they didn't, like Greg said, they should have probably done a better job with renaming either last year or this year. So there wasn't this misunderstanding, but I'll get that email to you right away. It explains everything.
Great. Danny?
Mr. Chair, just on a follow-up. So Executive Director Johnson, was that million 1.8 taken into account with the roving crew money left over? So is that really not available? Is that part of the making that money add up to $5 million? Do you know that? I'm wondering. Did he answer? Oh, it was. Okay,
yes,
so that's taken into account in their roving crew analysis of the $4.5 million they need. Thank you.
Jamie? Yes.
Just a quick question. I'm assuming that October 1st meeting is going to also be a Zoom meeting then?
I think it will be. Okay. We're having so much fun. Any other comments, guidance to the chairs, questions of staff, follow-up? Ashley?
Yeah, just a quick question. This discussion has been really helpful. If we want to follow up with one particular comment that somebody made, I'm not sure what the protocol is. Are we okay reaching out to that individual member, or do we need to go through staff to get clarification or to have a conversation about what somebody said today?
I think you are empowered to have an individual discussion, keep in mind the open meeting law, and you can't involve or forward information to too many of us. But if there's something that would benefit all of us that any of you have as a discussion, I would encourage you to send it to staff who can circulate it to everybody. So we all take benefit of conversations. The other thing you can do is you can ask staff to ask a question on your behalf, and then they can forward it on to everyone as well. And Mark isn't shaking his head at me, so that was good advice. Any other?
Well, Mr. Chair, to that, I guess, to Mark, the open meeting law, I mean, I guess I'm not up on it completely, or I've forgotten all the ramifications. For the council, what is it?
What's the council? The no majority of their 12 members, so six of us can't have a separate conversation without having, or seven of us, I guess, without having, no majority can have a discussion, nor can the executive committee, which is five, have a discussion that would involve more than two. And you also can't do serial conversations. So you can't call seven people to talk about the same thing. That's considered the same as talking to them all at the same time and violating the open meeting law. Yep. So it's always better to involve staff so staff can send stuff out to everybody rather than get caught in a situation where any of us are forwarding to everybody any comments or anything else.
Okay, but
yeah.
Okay, but individually per project, it's not an issue.
No.
Right. Okay.
And if Jamie said something to you, sent something this morning, and you want to follow up just with her to get her perspective, that's fine. Just don't call five other people to have the same conversation.
Exactly.
Jamie B?
Was just going to add that we've been advised at the legislature that would also apply to text messages and group texts. Okay. So just for everybody's knowledge, you know, you couldn't, sort of the same as what David just described, you couldn't do that via text message either, you know, trying to whatever, have the same conversation with multiple people that way either.
Yeah, in any form. And it's, I know earlier this year, Ron and I had a conversation and Denny wanted to have a conversation with me about the same thing and I had to ignore him, which is not what I like to do, but having that conversation with Denny would have put me in violation, all three of us in violation of the open meeting law. So I had to not do something. It's very challenging, but it is what we have to work with. Any other thoughts, guidance, questions? Well, thank you all for taking the time today to have a really interesting discussion, and I appreciate everyone's willingness to take this extra time. I know it is a burden. I know everyone loves Zoom. But I think it really was helpful for us to be able to hear what other people were thinking. So appreciate very much everyone's time. And Sandy, getting us that spreadsheet was really helpful. Thank you for doing that last night on little notice. We do appreciate it. And with that, I will adjourn the meeting.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, I guess I won't. Mark has a comment.
You can adjourn, but I'd sure like to make a comment just to thank the staff. I know I mentioned this the other day, but the Zoom stuff, although it's not real, you know, some people really don't like it, others like it a little bit or maybe more. It's really been interesting and at how challenging it is for the staff to behind the scenes, especially Sandy and Amanda, and boy, I tell you, it's really opened my eyes watching those two. So I want to tell them very much thank you, and also to Joe for for all the preparations and everything that goes into this. So anyway, I wanted to make that comment in front of everybody, please.
Thank you all. We appreciate it. And remember, your forms are due on the 17th, and we'll see you on the 1st.
Thank you.